Teamsters Union versus the City of Seattle first.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Peter Goldman representing the Longshoremen's Union, and with me today are my law partner Wyatt Golding and Cameron Williams, president of ILWU Local 19. And I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. We're here today because the Soto Arena MOU was an action that limited the choice of reasonable alternatives of potential public arena sites in violation of WAC 197-11070, which I'll also refer to as 070. The proposal or project action in this case should have been whether to build a new public arena in Soto or elsewhere, and with what mitigation conditions. But the defendants had no patience for a neutral public project EIS alternatives process. Instead, to ensure the success of Mr. Hansen's proposed Soto Arena and the immediate return of the Sonics, Seattle and King County signed an MOU that effectively limited the arena site to Mr. Hansen's already owned land in Soto. I'll first address why the MOU was an action, and then why it limited alternatives contrary to 070.
Was it a binding action?
Your Honor, binding is not the issue in this case. Anytime the first step of a government project is taken, the government always has the opportunity to decide not to proceed with the project. The issue in this case is whether the action violated 070. And not whether it was binding.
And so, how do you define the action consistent with the WAC?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I'm going to return to that right now. The MOU was an action under the plain terms of 7042A. It was, and I respectfully direct the court's attention, it was a decision, right here, a decision on a specific project. It was a decision because it was an actual ordinance authorizing the MOU. And the project was the arena project. So the issue here is whether the MOU was authorized, was a decision, and towards the arena project. And that is the issue here, is whether or not this decision violated 070. The question of whether or not it was binding is just simply not the issue. The question is whether or not the initial decision limited alternatives under 070. In fact, a binding requirement would immunize critical pre-EIS actions from 070, which makes no sense at all.
And what in the MOU limited the alternatives?
Your Honor, numerous things on its face and by operation. On its face, it specifically designated the project site as Soto. It set forth 34 pages of binding pre-agreed business terms that applied only to an arena in Soto as opposed to an arena anywhere in the region. Under Section 24B, which arises after SEPA review and after all the other quote-unquote conditions precedent take place, it precludes the city. It does not provide the city with the county the authority to actually locate the arena anywhere else. It says it's more or less an up or down decision on the Soto Arena with or without additional or different mitigation conditions. It says nowhere that they could actually choose the other site. It's simply an up or down with mitigation on that site. It effectively singled out the Seattle Center in advance as the only alternative that would be studied in the EIS as opposed to all reasonable alternatives for any conceivable arena anywhere else. And it conditioned reimbursement of up to $5 million in development costs on the council's ultimate selection of the Soto Arena. And then by operation, it became even more egregious. The MOU was signed specifically authorizing and expecting Mr. Hansen to go out and spend up to $500 million on a team, assuming that team would move to the Key Arena for a few years and then eventually locate in the Soto Arena. And the Soto Arena was right there, and we saw it every day during the Sacramento Kings situation. It was always there. It was going to eventually move into the Soto Arena. It expected Mr. Hansen, with the cooperation of the city, to actually design an arena in Soto. And that design approval is practically complete, virtually 80% complete as we speak today. We have petitions to vacate streets. That this is all in the record. We have determinations of significant. We have master development permits in process. Design reviews virtually complete. So the design. This is not just Mr. Hansen's unilateral decision to take a business risk and risk someone saying don't do it here. The city and the county encouraged him, expected him to do it. In fact, created it as a conditioned precedent. And furthermore. The MOU created this expectation of a Soto Arena by the commencement of drafting final transaction documents before the EIS was even out. So in conclusion, on its face, and by virtue of the steps that it encouraged and required Mr. Hansen to take, the alternatives were limited. Now, I don't want to overstate my case. There is nothing in black and white in this MOU that says the arena must be here. That's not the question. I'm not here saying that it must be here. But the issue here isn't whether or not the MOU designates the site. The issue is whether it reasonably limited alternatives and whether it limited the choice of reasonable alternatives. And it's our position that on its face and by operation, it was designed to reasonably constrain the alternatives to this Soto location before, in fact, any CEPA review had been conducted. Now, we understand this court's not in the business of divining how the councils might vote in the future, but it is the business of this court to determine whether the MOU impermissibly limited or coerced alternatives before the EIS was completed.
How do you think this should have gone forward? It sounds to me like what you're saying is that the only way that, I guess you wouldn't even have an MOU in this case, but that the city and county should have gotten together and said, we'd like to have a new arena for basketball and hockey. Let's think about where we would like to put it. But, of course, that wasn't the political reality. They weren't ever going to do it unless there was a private investor who was involved.
That's correct, Your Honor. There, first of all, as we said in our brief, there was a way to do it, which is a neutral MOU, which is to explore the site. But the fact that there is only one Mr. Hansen out there wanting to build an arena is a political reality that could be taken into account after SEPA. In other words, after SEPA, the city and the county could have said, well, we either get our arena or we don't, and it's going to be in Soto because there's only one Mr. Hansen. But that does not license, the fact that there's only one Mr. Hansen out there did not license the city and the county from effectively making it reality before SEPA, which is what took place here. So in other words, it's okay to choose later on based on what their only one proposal. But it's not okay to go into this document essentially trying to making it a virtual certainty. The idea here was to build momentum through the process of getting a team, moving them here, designing a building, doing financial transactions. And so at the time of the CEPA approval, it would create incredible pressure and momentum to approve that location. Thank you. 2 minutes. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jeff Weber. I'm with the Seattle City Attorney's Office representing the City of Seattle here. The attorneys for King County and WSA Properties are also here today. The issue in this case is whether the MOU in this matter is an action within the meaning of SEPA, and as I'll explain, it is not. For that reason, no prior SEPA review was required. In addition, there's no judicial review possible at this stage as to the MOU's compliance with SEPA. But even if the MOU were in action, it did not limit the city and county's choice of reasonable alternatives, and therefore it complied with SEPA in any event. Now, because this case turns on the terms of an agreement, we have to remember what the MOU actually does and what it does not do. Fundamentally, the MOU establishes a process, and a critical element of that process is SEPA review. Section 5 requires full SEPA review before a decision is made regarding any public funding of an arena. And critically, the MOU reserves any decision whether to proceed with the Soto Arena until after SEPA review, and that review and a decision whether to proceed are a condition precedent to commitment of any public financing. In that context, the MOU is not an action. Whether something is an action under SEPA depends on the definition of action at WAC 197.11.704. Now, this definition limits actions to certain enumerated agency decisions, and the MOU does not contain any of the enumerated decisions. It does not contain a decision to license, fund, or undertake an activity that will directly modify the environment. It does not contain a decision to purchase, sell, lease, transfer, or exchange natural resources. It does, of course, contemplate the potential for future actions, helping fund an arena, purchasing and leasing public land, but it does not make those decisions now, and therefore it is not an action. Now, appellant's interpretation of this definition...
What then do you make of the word undertake?
Well, undertake obviously connotes the idea that the public entity would be somehow doing the project.
What is this MOU, not an undertaking by the parties?
Well, it is not a decision at this point to undertake an arena. It is a...
This is the word that defines decision, so we don't get to become circular in this and say, well, it's not a decision because it's not a decision. It's an undertaking. And I don't know what an undertaking is necessarily, but if we look at the dictionary definition of undertake, it's going to be to take steps to begin.
Well, I think the critical issue is...
That's one of the...
Right. The critical issue, in my view, is whether this provision covers any decision regarding a project, as the appellant contends.
Drop the word decision. How about any undertaking?
Well, but with due respect, I don't think you can drop the word decision, because decision is the critical word here in the statute, and it's a decision that is, a project action.
To make an undertaking, call it MOU.
But
to the extent that that has all of the, if you will, the indicia of a decision having been made, subject to a condition, of course, so that it goes along and things are done, particularly design review, it seems to me. What are you going to do if the design review is done and the CEPA review comes back that there are all these conditions that need to be complied with?
Well, under the terms of the MOU, after CEPA review has been completed and the impacts have been revealed and discussed, at that point the city and county get to make a decision whether they would like to proceed with the Soto Arena or not. And they have complete discretion to decide not to. And that's why we don't have any of the enumerated agency decisions in this case. Now, what appellant would suggest is that this definition makes any decision regarding a project an action, as long as the project would have an environmental impact. But I would suggest that's not what the plain language of this definition does. Appellant suggests that the first sentence is essentially the end of the inquiry. A project action involves a decision on a specific project. But that's only the first hurdle that must be jumped. That essentially distinguishes a project action from non-project actions, which are the subject of subsection 2B, which involves decisions... That's right. Subsection 2B, which isn't on here, it's the next subsection, says that non-project actions involve decisions on policies, plans, or programs. So the first sentence here just differentiates project actions from non-project actions. The critical next language is here. Projects include and are limited to certain enumerated agency decisions. And essentially, appellant's approach reads that language right out of the regulation.
Well, back to Judge Gross's question, there have been a number of undertakings in the form of permits and actions that have been taken, if you will. So what's your response to the argument that by operation of the MOU, the alternatives have been limited and CEPA review has not been engaged in before the undertaking?
There simply is no legal or factual basis for a conclusion that this MOU has limited the choice of reasonable alternatives. First and foremost, because of the plain language of the MOU, the decision to proceed has been reserved for a future time. And the only way that appellant can somehow allege that the choice of alternatives has been limited is based on this concept of momentum, which, as we've explained in our briefing, does not appear anywhere in the statute, and there's no Washington case law that makes the creation of momentum into a test for whether the choice of alternatives has been limited.
Is this something that happens in less controversial or less publicly visible planning, for instance? Is it something that has or could happen with respect to just an ordinary development where the city and the developer enter into a memorandum of understanding about how they're going to approve a subdivision in, out in the Issaquah or someplace like that, and all of these things are going to happen, and various reviews are going to be undertaken, but the idea is that there's going to be a development in this particular location in Issaquah. Just as an example.
Well, I'm not sure I exactly understand that.
I'm wondering about the consequences of the decision that you're asking us to make with respect to environmental review, generally speaking, whether this then becomes some kind of a formula or a recipe for creating momentum whenever somebody wants development but is afraid that popular sentiment is going to drag the process out and perhaps frustrate it entirely.
I don't think it does, and the reason is because the typical scenario would be the government is making a permit approval, which is clearly an action under this definition. What we have here is a situation that is fairly unusual, because we have a situation where there is no decision that is within this definition. Well, the Magnolia case, I think, is fundamentally distinguishable. In Magnolia, what you had was a city approval of a redevelopment plan that, as the court recognized, involved a decision to purchase, sell, lease, transfer, exchange natural resources. But the fundamental different factual situation was that plan was, as everyone acknowledged, binding on the city in its use of the property once the federal government approved that plan. This case is fundamentally different because the MOU does not make a decision to proceed with the Soto Arena, and it reserves that decision until after CEPA review.
So you've got everything else but buying yourself.
Well, we have...
From a legal standpoint.
But that's the critical distinction, because we have not bound ourselves and we do not have a definition, we do not have a decision that's within the definition of action. There was no need for prior CEPA review.
Well, could you clarify what's going on right now with respect to review? I take it there is... CEPA review.
Correct. There is currently an environmental impact statement being prepared. It's not done yet. Once that environmental impact statement has been completed and any appeals regarding the adequacy of that have been resolved, then the city and the county will be in a position to make a decision whether to proceed or not with the Soto Arena.
Let me ask just a little question here. The briefs mention, apparently along with this memorandum of understanding, there was also an interlocal agreement, which is, at least within the briefs, being challenged. But I don't – do you perceive that as being an important document that we should be looking at?
No, I don't. And I think all the parties recognize it's the MOU that is the governing document here.
Okay.
But going back to the question of limitation of reasonable alternatives, in addition to the fact that there's no legal basis for the idea that momentum is a factor for determining whether alternatives have been limited – when you look at the plain language of the MOU, appellant's argument about limitation of alternatives simply doesn't hold water. The MOU, by its terms, does not limit the alternatives that may be considered in the EIS. There's simply no language doing that. It also does not limit the city's authority to choose a site different than a Soto Arena. As we've explained, under state law, the city has full discretion to make that decision. It's not a matter of contract, and we haven't promised in the MOU not to select some other site if the city and county decide not to proceed with the Soto Arena. Similarly, the question of substantive CEPA authority just isn't relevant. Thank you very much.
I wasn't blowing on that, I promise.
Okay. Well, the important point here is that the regulation says what the regulation says. It says that an action is a decision on a specific project, the decision on the arena project, and it does not say that the decision has to do little one and little two. It says the project includes decisions to do those things. So it's the project that's done it. Now, one logical question which I divined in the court's question is why not wait until later in an adequacy challenge? Why shouldn't we just wait and see what happens and then later challenge the EIS based on adequacy and say, well, you limited alternatives. How is that fair? Well, there are two very important reasons why. We had 30 days to challenge the MOU, which is independent government action. In an adequacy challenge, we're not challenging the MOU as premature governmental action that violates 070. We're challenging the adequacy of the EIS, whether or not it fairly set forth the environmental implications of building an arena here and there with mitigation conditions. It's a completely different action. It's in addition to, not in lieu of the action we're bringing right now. In fact, 070 is clearly a prospective type of regulation. It says that no action should be taken until we have a SEPA EIS.
But now, let me back you up to the earlier question, which is whether there is an action. And you say that the decision here was a decision to limit the possible sites. Now, doesn't the language in the MOU only talks about contemplates, right? Isn't it possible that the process, all the things that are happening now, could result in the city or some other Chris Hansen coming in and saying, "Hey, you know, put it in Bellevue. We got an alternative here."
Until the ink is dry, anything can happen. But that's, again, respectfully, not the question. The question is whether there was an action before an EIS that limited the alternatives, not whether down the road something could change. This was meant to be prospective because otherwise, why have this have an adverse environmental impact? What would be the point of Paren A, which is not at issue in this case, if this was not intended to be a prospective measure? Thank you.